From NPR and Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. The Coachella Valley is famous for its music festival, but if you drive minutes away from the fairgrounds, there's a very different Coachella experience.
And our valley, just in general, is a valley of contrast.
What do you see? I mean, there's nothing here. There's no street. There's no sidewalk. There isn't any parks around here to go to. There isn't any stores. There's not a Starbucks.
We explore how and why some in the eastern Coachella Valley don't have access to clean water. And we meet a man who's trying to change that, Gastulo Estrada.
What do you want for this community?
Well, I just want them to have a better life. Just have the basic things that people take for granted. Make sure that at least the water that they're using is essentially the same water that everybody's using.
All this and more coming up on Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Stay with us. No te vayas. Welcome to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. A year ago, our producer, Antonia Cerejido, went on a trip. And when she came back, she took me into the studio to talk to me about it. I did see that you were traveling to California, and then I did see that you were traveling to Coachella. And of course, I was like, why is Antonia going to Coachella?
Did you assume that I was going to the music festival?
I did, which, you know, I have all kinds of issues around the music festival.
What are your issues around the music festival?
I actually don't know anything about it, except, you know, what I occasionally might see in a magazine that I pick up in an airport.
Yeah.
You should not be paying that amount of money to go see music, no matter what. I don't care.
Well, so I obviously had heard of the Coachella Music Festival. It's probably the most famous music festival in the whole country. And I'm from Southern California, so like all the girls in my high school went. Flower crowns, jean shorts. When I think of Coachella, I think of EDM music and like dudes in tank tops. I don't think I realized until recently that Coachella is the name of the entire desert valley. It's 2 hours east of Los Angeles driving, and it's a very large valley. It's right by the Salton Sea. And one of the small things that happens is this music festival. And then the rest of the year, it's this other place. The thing about Coachella is that there are really two different Coachellas. There's the west side with Palm Springs and beautiful resorts and golf courses, and then there's the east side, which is where I met Jaime Lemos Ibarra.
¿Y qué haces para tu trabajo?
Mi trabajo es mantenimiento de albercas.
¿Dónde?
El Indian Palms Hotel. Yo estoy viviendo aquí desde el año 2005.
So Jaime cleans pools for a living at the Indian Palms Hotel, which is this big resort on the west side, and he's been working there for around 15 years. So he lives on the east side in a mobile home park called St. Anthony's. And him and his fellow St. Anthony's resident, Roberto Mendez Gomez, actually told me a story that really struck me. He told me that he would come back from these long hours, these long days where he was doing hard manual labor, cleaning these pools in the intense sun. He'd go home, he was tired, he'd turn on the faucet, and
de repente caía lodo, ya era lodo, entonces era algo muy sucio el agua. Entonces ya no era... Era una emergencia la que teníamos.
Mud was coming out of the faucet, and the water was super dirty. They told me it was an emergency.
Simplemente se derrumbó el pozo.
The well in the park had just completely broken down.
Cuando estaban lavando la ropa, me tocó mirar. Salía bien sucia la ropa, en vez de salir limpia, salía más sucia.
And then he says that when they tried to wash the clothes with the water, the clothes would actually come out dirtier than when they started.
Yeah.
So I'm having a moment, I'm like, wait a second, and this exists within the same community?
Yeah. When I was in Coachella, a term that Bob Kieran, who works at the Coachella Water Valley District, used, and I think is perfect, is he called the valley a valley of contrasts. And there's this situation where on the west side, you have these pristine resorts, some of the most famous golf courses in the whole country. And then the people who are cleaning those resorts don't have access to clean water.
But of course, the other thing that I'm thinking about is, wait, where have I heard this before? Flint, Michigan.
So What's happening in Coachella is actually very different than what happened in Flint, Michigan.
And tensions running high in Flint, Michigan as the city's water crisis continues.
Residents say they've suffered skin lesions, hair and vision loss, and depression. There are also concerns about miscarriages, learning disabilities in children, and legionnaires.
They had a water source that was poisoned. It had lead poisoning in the water, and city and state officials knew about it, and they decided to turn an eye. In Coachella, really the issue is that these are privately run wells on the east side, and it's really unclear who's supposed to take charge of those wells and take responsibility for this lack of access to clean water. But so that's why I went to Coachella, to find out why is it that in 2017 there are people without access to clean water, and who is responsible for what's going on. And while I didn't have the answer to all of those questions, I heard of a man who has made it his life mission to solve the problem of lack of access to water in the Eastern Valley. He's a Mexican-American civil engineer named Castulo Estrada.
For the rest of this hour, we're going to be looking into Castulo's story and what his role is in solving this water problem. And we're going to delve into the history of why this water access problem happened right here in the Coachella Valley in the first place. So tell me what happened after you met Castulo.
So the first place Castulo took me to was his first civil engineering project he ever worked on.
This park is one of the city's oldest park. It's called Bagduma Park.
Wow,
so this
huge.
This whole thing here, I saw it when it was all dirt.
Gastelu's job is to draw up plans for infrastructure projects, almost like he's a creator of IKEA manuals.
What do you mean IKEA manuals?
Like he creates the plan, but then somebody else executes it, so he's actually always surprised about how it turns out.
I think like the way I describe it, that being my first project that I worked on, is almost, I imagine like when you cook, I imagine a cook. He knows exactly all the little things that he did, and he probably thinks, man, I should have done this. And if you didn't cook it, and you're just eating it, you probably think, man, that thing tastes great. I can't really think of what else I could have done. Well, it's the same thing with the project. I know exactly where there's maybe like a little thing that I don't like the little details. The way we put the bumps, the traffic bumps, I would have done it different. I would have staggered them. Right now they're not staggered, and I think they're too frequent.
I love the fact that he's so kind of geeky dorky.
Yeah. Yeah. He sees the world differently. Like, you know, I don't drive down the street and think about like, oh, the stoplight could have been 4 inches to the right. And he's an engineer. So engineers inherently are more aware of issues that deal with city planning and resources. But the thing that makes Castulo really uniquely qualified to sort of talk about the issues of the Eastern Coachella Valley is that he's from there. Where are we?
We're in the community of Oasis. I call it Oasis. It's an unincorporated area. This is where I grew up.
So Oasis is one of these mobile home parks. It's smaller than St. Anthony's Mobile Home Park, which we visited at the top of the show. But like St. Anthony's, it's in an unincorporated area, which means it has no city government and it falls under the purview of the county, in this case, Riverside County. But unincorporated means that it doesn't have its own police department or its own ambulances. And most importantly for this story, no one provides water for them. So the people in the area, they dig their own water wells and they control them completely independently. For someone whose whole life is about infrastructure, Castulo didn't grow up with much infrastructure, if any. When I spent the week with him driving around the Coachella Valley, there was one word he kept using to describe the east side and the way he grew up.
It's different.
What sorts of things are different, specifically?
Well, just the conditions, you know? What do you see? I mean, there's nothing here. There's no street. There's no sidewalk. There isn't any parks around here to go to. There isn't any stores. There's not a Starbucks, you know?
The irony of this place being called Oasis.
Right, but then he corrected you and said it's actually, they all say Oasis because they say it in Spanish.
Yeah, everyone there spoke Spanish. Most of the people there work in agriculture. On top of the services being bad in these parks, you know, we heard about the wells breaking down, the clothes coming out dirty. There was another bigger problem.
When I used to take showers as a kid, we'd have to fill up a bucket. And then that was the water I used to shower. Whether that water that was coming in was clean or not clean. You couldn't tell from looking at it that there was levels of arsenic.
Arsenic? Are you serious?
Yeah, arsenic. In 2010, the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, found that the state, the whole state of California, was in non-compliance with the Federal Safe Drinking Water Act because of arsenic. Over 55,000 California residents were being served with water that had illegal amounts of arsenic. In high doses, it's poisonous. And at low doses, over time, it's a carcinogen, so it can cause cancer. And one of the places where these high levels of arsenic was found was in private wells in these mobile home parks. St. Anthony's, the one that we heard from at the top, is on the list of the top 10 mobile home parks with the highest levels of arsenic in the state.
My God.
Yeah. And as one would expect, when the people on the east side found out about the arsenic, they stopped trusting their wells.
Buenos días.
Buenos días.
Bien. Sí. ¿Cómo está?
Bien, ¿y tú?
Bien, bien.
This is Marta Benitez. She's been in the States for over 30 years. She used to pick grapes. And Castro took me to meet her because her and her husband are two of those people who stop trusting their wells. She told me that the water that comes into her trailer has arsenic
lo
in it.
Lo usan para lavar.
Para lavar trastes, tomar, bañarnos y lavar.
Sí.
Sí, porque para tomar tenemos filtros. Apenas nos pusieron filtros.
So Marta says that they only use water to wash and to bathe themselves, but if they want to drink water, they have to have filters installed.
Yeah, so thankfully for Marta, they had these filters that were installed by this nonprofit called Pueblo Unido put in a little less than a year ago. But before that, they were buying tons of bottled water. And so Pueblo Unido has installed 160 of these filters, but they estimate that there's 100 trailers that could still need filters. And these kinds of calculations, figuring out who needs what and how much, that's what Castro's been obsessed with since he was a kid.
I grew up with the History Channel. That used to be my favorite channel. And there was a time when the History Channel was all about World War I or World War II. And that's all I would watch. World War One, World War Two.
What attracted you to World War One and World War Two?
I don't know how to explain it. I was so intrigued in the notion that men would go to war against each other for the control of resources.
Classic thing kids worry about.
You know, I am a little obsessed with World War II, but the fact that he's like obsessed with World War I and World War II, it's like, ooh, take it to another level.
So around the time that Castro turned 25, when he was working for the city of Coachella doing his engineer thing, there were some changes happening to the Coachella Valley Water District. The Coachella Valley Water District is the largest water agency in the whole Coachella Valley, and it was being threatened with a class action suit for its voting setup. So up to that point, they were doing what's called at-large voting. Do you know what that is?
No.
So at-large voting is when the entire valley was voting for these five seats. And what ended up happening is that almost always people from the west side were being elected because that's where there were higher voter turnouts. And the issues of the east side weren't being represented very much by the board members. It also meant that there had only been white members on the board. But before even reaching the court, the board voted unanimously to change the way they did voting from at-large to by district. And that's when the current mayor of the city of Coachella tapped Castro and was like, hey, I think you'd be a great candidate. You know about infrastructure, you've been working at the utilities department, and you are really familiar with the issues of the east side. He would be the first Mexican-American to ever serve as a board member at the water district.
All right, so he decides to run. Does he win?
Yes, he won. He got almost 70% of the vote. And
that's huge.
Yeah, a lot. It was like a grand slam. I mean, there he was, a couple years out of college, about to make decisions about the most precious resource in the area.
It's all very strange in a way.
What do you mean?
I don't know. I can't explain it. It's just strange, you know?
Coming up on Latino USA, with Castro in office, can he make clean water more accessible for the East Side? That's coming up. Stay with us. No te vayas.
Thank you. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and from the Annenberg Foundation, committed to supporting, educating, and engaging communities in the United States and globally for more than 25 years. Learn more at annenbergfoundation.org. And Newman's Own Foundation, working to nourish the common good by donating all profits from Newman's Own food products to charitable organizations that seek to make the world a better place. More information is available at newmansownfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa, and I'm back with Antonia Cerejido, who went out reporting in the Coachella Valley in California. She was following the story of a young civil engineer named Castulo Estrada, who's working to bring clean water to rural communities on the east side of the valley. When we left off, Castulo had just been elected to the board of the Coachella Valley Water District. He was both the first Mexican-American and the youngest person to ever become a board member.
Yeah, that was back in 2014. And so now Castulo's been on the board for 3 years. And he's one of five members on the board. He's the only one who has grown up in the eastern, predominantly Latino side of the valley. And his position comes with a lot of power. I mean, to get an idea of the magnitude of the decisions he's deciding, the budget that they just approved a couple months ago for 2017 was $369 million.
Oh my God, that's huge. Wow.
So much money. And that's because water is serious business in California, and in particular in Southern California. And Castulo takes his position very seriously. While I was there, he was in the process of buying a car, and he had been to the car dealership like six times. His style is to observe.
That's what I'm doing. I try to stay back for a little bit, and like you said, assess the situation before I make a choice.
Castulo's always been an observer. While I was driving around the mobile home parks with him on the east side, he kept bringing up these vivid memories he had of growing up there.
We used to have a lot of parties right there where that tree's at.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where I remember running around here, dancing, playing with the kids, looking for scorpions. There's like little scorpions back there. Remember the songs, the music, my parents dancing, you know. They were young, too, at that time.
Do you remember the song?
Back in the day, I think they danced a lot to, like, the Banda Machos. Probably some Sonora Dinamita.
So Castulo grew up in Oasis, in that small trailer home. But when he was seven, his parents realized that they actually wanted to stay in the U.S. And so they bought their first home in the city of Coachella, which is this working class Latino city. It's 96% Latino. And Castulo took me to meet his dad. So we pull up, and outside the house, there's a family friend listening to music really loud. Castulo knows, like, the name of everyone on the street. All these houses are squished together in this cul-de-sac. And I meet Jerónimo.
Mucho gusto. Antonia.
So this is my dad. He probably just got out of work. He's probably trying to rest. As you know, it's really hot right now.
That day, I kid you not, was in the 110s.
Híjole.
And so he's probably out there from the time the sun gets up to about just recently. So he's probably had a long day.
Me levanté temprano, fui, soy regador de verduras, riego verduras.
Castulo's dad has been managing the irrigation on a vegetable farm for a little over 20 years. He's in his 60s, but he has no plans to retire. And he says he misses Mexico, but he's really glad that he moved to the States.
Extraño a México como mi pueblo, pero hoy me siento contento haber venido acá porque aquí es un lugar donde...
He's happy he moved to a place where he says there's justice.
Puedes seguir defendiendo tu dignidad, tus derechos. A lo mejor ya estuviera muerta ya.
He says that if he stayed in Mexico, he'd probably be dead by now because he's the kind of person who demands justice from his government, which is not the way things worked back in Mexico.
Y es su gobierno quien debe poner orden.
He says it's the government's role to establish order. And so I asked him, do you feel proud seeing your son working for the government now?
Siento contento. Es que creo que ha tenido una gran experiencia en la vida él. Y ojalá que siempre pues, persiga sus cosas con dignidad.
He says he's proud of Castulo and that he wants him to keep pursuing his career with dignity.
If I got something from my dad, it's like he's very thoughtful. He thinks a lot, so...
Castelo does think a lot. And like his dad, he believes people should expect things from their government, something he doesn't think the people he grew up with do enough.
Even in the areas that might be in a bad condition, the people are not going to be, you're not going to see them being unhappy. They're going to be happy and they're going to be, in a way, even thankful because they come from a place that's even worse, maybe in Mexico. They come to a place that we might consider here as bad, and it is bad, but they just accept it, you know? And you heard my dad. He was grateful that he had work, even though it's hard work, but he was grateful for it. You know, he thinks it's a blessing. Which it is. That's the card that they were dealt, and they have to stick it through because that's what they need to do in order to give their kids a better opportunity. And so they accept it. They say, well, this is my role.
He's saying that they're complacent.
Yeah, he thinks that his community should expect more and ask for more.
What do you want for this community?
Well, I just want them to have a better life, you know? I want them to just have the right, you know, have the basic things that people take for granted. That's it, you know? Make sure that their water's good. Make sure that at least the water that they're using is essentially the same water that everybody's using. Not to have to worry about whether it is or not. When you're connected to the system, you know that it's being taken care of.
So by connected to a system, what Castelo means is getting water not through a well you dug yourself in your backyard with your own two hands, but from an actual water agency that can guarantee that you're not going to have arsenic or mud coming out of your showerhead. Most people in the unincorporated East Side aren't connected to a system. So I wanted to find out, how did we get here? How is it that one half of the valley doesn't have to worry about the quality of their water while the other one does?
Nowhere is the importance of water better understood than a desert.
This is Bob Kieran. He works for the communications department at the Coachella Valley Water District and is sort of the unofficial historian at the agency.
The Coachella Valley Water District actually began in 1918, and the purpose for this agency was to see the importation of water from the Colorado River.
Where was the water coming from before?
Before the canal was built, the desert was very fortunate in having a large underground aquifer.
So the desert is uninhabitable for people. People can't live in the desert. And so the Coachella Valley is on a giant desert, but it's a very special desert because it sits on an aquifer. Do you know what an aquifer is?
No.
An aquifer is a permeable rock that can absorb water. And so even though it's a desert, they would, you know, when people first settled there, they would dig into the ground and they would have wells that would spring water.
What was happening in 1918 is the people who were here realized that their artesian wells didn't flow as quickly as they once had. So they needed to find additional sources. So even though they had the aquifer, they didn't want to treat it like a mineral. They didn't want to say, oh, we're going to mine this vein of gold until it's done with and then move on.
So basically, the aquifer is not sustainable unless it's being replenished at the same rate as it's being used. And it was being used beyond its capacity as more and more people started to farm in the area. But in order to keep farming production up, the farmers wanted to participate in what became known as the Colorado River Compact.
Wait, what is the Colorado River Compact?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. The Colorado River Compact was signed in 1922. It was a government deal that split the use of the Colorado River between seven states, including Nevada, Arizona, and of course, California. And while the deal was being made, the farmers of Coachella were nervous that they wouldn't get enough access to the river's water. So to advocate for themselves, they founded the Coachella Valley Water District. That was back in the 20s. The next big milestone in the valley happened in the 60s.
The Coachella Valley, for many years, agriculture was king when it came to the economy. Well, starting in the mid to late 60s,
all of a sudden there were resorts and there were golf courses and way more people started moving into the area.
There are quite a few golf courses here in the Coachella Valley. One of the more high-profile players of golf in those early years was former President Dwight Eisenhower. President Obama has come here to play golf. Golf plays a very important part of the economy today.
So this is a whole other part of Coachella that has nothing to do with the music concert. This is all about golf.
Well, it's just like, you know, a lot of these like Sunbelt towns in the 60s popped up and they became kind of like resort towns. So actually, when I was staying in Coachella for this story, I stayed at the Fantasy Spring Resorts and Casino. And, you know, there are all these resorts, and then there's also Palm Springs, which I don't know if you've ever been, but it's pools on pools on pools.
Mild climates. The area became more attractive to winter residents.
Initially, people came and they started moving in, and they had their lawns, and they were living the American dream. But as more and more people came, the aquifers levels got lower and lower. And so all of a sudden, the need for a hyper-regulated agency that overlooks the water became incredibly important.
Who is it who was moving in?
So that's a really important question and a really good point. Yes, you have these people who are getting their summer homes, these wealthy new residents, but all of the new economies that are growing, they require a very particular labor force. You know, it's the people who are cleaning the pools, the people who are cleaning the resorts, or these agriculture workers. And that has meant low-wage migrant workers. So you have these wealthy resorts, these wealthy residents sitting next to some of the poorest people in America.
And our valley, just in general, is a valley of contrasts.
Okay, so I have a better understanding of the history of the valley and the water district. But what is the water district's role with this group of people who don't have access to clean water?
So when Castillo first started at the water district, he realized he had a challenge. The people on the east side were not signed up to the district or any water agency in the area. And because of that, the water district was very limited in how they could change things on the east side. But Castillo had an idea. He helped found what is now known as the Disadvantaged Communities Task Force. And along with other people from the district, people from the county, locals, and NGOs like Pueblo Unido, who we heard about earlier that installed the filters, they began to meet and plan for ways to apply to these state grants that would help people on the east side.
What's the name of where we are?
This is called the San Jose Community Center. They generally use this, but...
Hola.
This is where we actually have the planning meetings. This is where everything originated.
This is where it all started?
Right. And Castillo has been very involved in attending the initial meetings. And he brought the idea to the water district.
This is Sergio Carranza. He is a lot of fun. And he is the founder of Pueblo Unido, and he was really excited to take me to San Anthony's mobile home park, which is the place where they had the mud water coming out of the faucets, because he wanted to show me their new well.
Can I try this water? Is there a...
That's what I was going to actually ask you, because you will be incredibly surprised about the taste of this water. This is kind of like tasting some wine, you know, that you take pride of.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I don't know if I'm tasting the water in my hand. Stealing from.
Tastes good. Tastes very like.
Very soft.
Very, very soft. Very.
Now again, if it wouldn't be for the arsenic, this water in the Eastern Coachella Valley is the best water, in terms of flavor, of the whole entire Coachella Valley.
If it wasn't for the arsenic. It's like the craziest way to preface any statement you're about to make. Yo, but it is true that it did taste good. And you can tell the difference when you have, like, water here in New York versus in California, no?
No.
What? I remember when I moved to New York, from New York City to San Diego.
Are you going to tell me that San Diego water tastes good?
San Diego water tastes like the worst water you've ever had.
Because I was going to say, I remember it being really disgusting.
So someone does have a feeling about how water tastes.
That's what I can tell you. When it's bad, I know it's bad.
Yeah. Most of Southern California doesn't have groundwater. You know, they have what's called surface water, which means that it comes from the river. It had to travel a long way. And by the time it gets to your faucet, it tastes god-awful. And so Coachella is a place where, presumably because of this aquifer, everyone should have access to safe, delicious, amazing water that, according to Sergio, is the best water there is.
So you actually took a sip of this water.
Mm-hmm.
You knew about the arsenic?
So this well that they set up has what's called reverse osmosis. And it's an incredibly fancy way of making sure that there's nothing in the water, you know, that's really purified. That's one of multiple things that Pueblo Unido has done in the area. So reverse osmosis is a very expensive option. They put in pumps in individual people's homes to make sure that the water was clean that was coming out of their faucet. And so there are a lot of people now who, thanks to this organization, do have access to clean water in their homes. So after this long day in 100 degree heat, Gasulo decided to take me to where the people on the east side go for fun.
Okay, and so where do the people of the east side of Coachella go for fun?
Swap meet, you guessed it.
The swap meet, such a West Coast thing. All right, so what's a swap meet?
It's like a farmer's market.
But like for everything.
Yeah, for everything. And I saw everything.
Yeah, I think now the big trend is those fidget spinners. So we're probably going to see a lot of folks trying to sell the fidget spinners.
I mean, we saw people selling horchata, which was delicious. Some like light up Nike shoes. Those were cool. And it was really where I saw Gasulo most relaxed. There's these long rows of tents. I mean, it was a huge swap meet. There was hundreds of people. The tents looked like they would never end. And as we were, like, looking out over all these Coachella Valley residents, I wanted to know, you know, what did Gasulo think would really actually help the east side?
If you could, like, wave a magic wand and you're like, this is what I need, what is it that you need?
I'd like it to be more of a priority. I think the state's on board. I think the state has made funding available for a lot of this stuff to happen, but unfortunately, it's a lot of the other jurisdictions that sometimes might make the process slower.
When Gasulo says the state is on board, what he's talking about is that the state has made funding available for local water projects through water bonds. The well that I drank from actually was paid for by this one of these state grants. But on a local level, he just doesn't see the same enthusiasm or push to really make a difference, especially in terms of accessibility to water on the east side.
I've seen where things get done. When there are issues and people get together and they resolve the issue, we have a program at CVWD, for example. We have a program called the Non-Potable Program. And this Non-Potable Program is a program that's been developed over the years. And we have goals and we've mapped all the golf courses that we want to connect to non-potable water.
The district is working on a project to make golf courses more sustainable and use more recycled water. And what Gasulo is saying is that it's been really easy to get people on board and working quickly on it.
And we have these goals. We've mapped it out. We say, we're going to put so much money to do this. And we have a goal to connect at least three of these golf courses per year. And we want to achieve that goal. And we're going to make it happen. Well, I've always said I'd like to see the same thing happen in the east side, where we identify, where are all the mobile home parks? And let's start creating a strategy of who we're going to connect, and let's put a number to it. Let's do three a year. Let's do two a year. Let's set some goals. Let's approach it in the same way that we're approaching this other issue, which I'm not saying is any less important. Like I said, it's not any less important. I think it's important, but I think that this other issue that I'm dealing with is as equally important, and I'd like to see the same type of effort and the same type of approach applied to it.
So in other words, you got to give people the same love and attention that you give to a golf course.
Kind of.
And that's what we're trying to achieve with this task force.
I wanted to know if what Gasulo was saying was true, whether other people at the water district or people in the county didn't see what was going on the east side as a priority. And so I asked them.
Coming up, we ask this question. Who really is responsible for the water problem in the Coachella Valley? Stay with us. No te vayas. Agua Santa. Agua Santa.
Agua Santa.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and from the Vital Projects Fund,
supporting the Museum of Modern Art in Manhattan, where Summer in the Sculpture Garden includes Peter Fishley and David Weiss's Snowman. More info and tickets at MoMA.org. And the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, working alongside others to build a culture of health that provides everyone in America a fair and just opportunity for health and well-being. More at rwjf.org.
Welcome back to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. And on today's show, we've been talking about the lack of access to clean water in the eastern Coachella Valley. And when we left off, our producer Antonia Cerejido was going to talk to other members of the Coachella Valley Water District. She wanted to know if they also saw providing clean water to the east side as a priority for the agency.
Yeah. The first person I spoke to was actually Jim Barrett, who's the general manager of the water district. So Castro's on the board and he votes and he makes decisions. But the real person who's running the day-to-day is Jim Barrett. And Jim spent a lot of time working for the city of San Diego, also doing things about utilities and water usage, and he really knows his stuff. And I sat down with him and I asked him, okay, you've been working with water management for decades now. How do you see the issue in the east side? What would you suggest?
So what we have out there is potentially a group of new customers that don't have the resourcing to pay their way in to the existing system. And by California law, we can't take revenue we receive from existing customers and spend it on new infrastructure to bring in new customers. So there is a little catch-22 there in trying to provide service to new folks.
Gastineau doesn't fully buy this argument that the district can't do more to improve the access to water on the east side because of the law.
Because everything has a solution, I think. If there are certain things on the law books that prevent you to do something that you know needs to be corrected, then maybe those laws need to change.
In general, the impression that I got from other people who work with Gastineau at the district is that they think what he's doing is noble, but that he may be overeager.
What is it like working with Gastineau?
Castillo has been great. He brings to the board a huge amount of energy. He's very intelligent and he's very committed. He came in with this as one of his primary areas, focus areas. And I think his work in developing the task force and pulling those people together has worked out very well. Although it is frustrating, I think, for him to recognize that we aren't moving faster, I think we wouldn't be where we are today without his personal involvement.
Jim is not an actual board member like Gastineau, and so the next person at the district I turned to was Peter Nelson. He was the president of the board for 4 years. He has a top position at one of these large-scale citrus farms. And I asked him if he saw a solution to the water problem on the east side.
So it's hard to get the water systems to those areas where they're not buying into the system first.
So what's the suggestion?
I think continuing on with statewide grants, the answer is a big question still out there.
Listening to both Peter and Jim talk, it made me think, if it's not the water district that's responsible, who is? One thing that both Peter and Jim brought up is that the issue could be looked at as not a water problem necessarily, but a housing problem. The argument is that it is way easier to get water safely into homes that have been built with the system in mind, not these scattered mobile home parks. Riverside County, which does have purview over this unincorporated land, is not a water management agency, but it does oversee housing. And the county has tried to address housing. It built these mobile home parks called Mountain View that I visited and, frankly, were beautiful.
So these look like California bungalow houses, trailers.
Yeah, so look at these. You know, they have streets. They have a water line. I mean, it's like a regular street. You know, they got curb, right? Look at, they got curb, they got driveways, they got lights. This is a community that has all the amenities.
I talked to the guys at St. Anthony's Mobile Home Park, the park where the mud used to come out of the faucet, and they told me that the Mountain View homes were too expensive. The rent at Mountain View is currently at $435 a month, while the residents at St. Anthony's told me they only paid $300. I wasn't able to get a recorded interview with anyone from Riverside County, but they did send me an email statement. They told me that their end goal is to connect all of the Eastside mobile home parks to the district system, but that it's very expensive. They need more funding from the state, and it's still years away. As far as housing, they see Mountain View as a success, and they want to invest in more parks like that in the future.
So it seems that both the Water District and the county are kind of pointing at the state.
Yeah, and the state has been allocating money to pay for local projects. So that's the government taking responsibility. But I became curious about business owners. They're the ones hiring the workers who don't have access to clean water.
When you spoke to the people who own the farms or who own these resorts, I mean, did they talk about any of their responsibility?
Well, so because Peter Nelson, the board member, works on this big farm, I did ask him that question.
You work in farming. There was a time in which farmers were encouraged to build what are now called labor camps, but housing for the agricultural workers who worked on their farms. Do you think that the people who hire these workers who live in these conditions are responsible, that they should be part of the solution for better housing?
So I'm not going to have a real official position on that, okay? But I will say, tell you some history of the Valley. I never operated a farm labor camp, but I talked to many people who did operate farm labor camps, and they offered housing, they offered food preparation facilities, showering activities, and so forth. And it seemed to work well for them. And I've talked to some real old timers that appreciated having workers and then offering these services to their workers.
But Peter says that local labor and housing commissions started to regulate the labor camps and fine them a lot of money.
I remember a guy telling me, yeah, there was a fight on the weekend and in the labor camp, and one of the windows got broke and the screen got ripped up. And the next week, it hadn't been fixed just yet. And a regulator came in and issued them some $5,000 fine. And they're a $5,000 fine, you know, it just happened. So then there was a push by the state to get what eventually were known as Polanco Parks approved. And that's what popped up all around the valley.
Polanco Parks are these small mobile home parks, 12 trailers or less, that are owned by field workers. Because in 1992, there was a bill passed by Senator Polanco, Richard Polanco, that incentivized field workers to own their own parks.
Some were legitimate, well-run facilities, and others were somewhat substandard. And so the health department of Riverside County went in and did a lot of regulations on those Polanco Park folks. So that's what we're facing today as a water district, is trying to get quality water to those Polanco Parks that have popped up all around the valley.
He didn't really quite answer the question.
No, he definitely did not really quite answer the question. What he's saying is, they tried. That's what he's saying. They were in charge of creating housing situations for them. And then
it got too difficult to meet all the regulations.
Yeah.
Which made me think, so it was too hard for you to make sure that they had clean running water, that they had a safe place to be, that there was basic amenities?
To his credit, what he is saying is not that. He said that there were little things that they were getting infractions for which the cost was too big.
Right.
So he's, you know, I don't think he's saying we didn't want to provide water and a clean place to stay or anything like that. I think that he's saying that the state made it too difficult for them to do that.
Entonces, ¿este es tu mobile home park?
Es mi propiedad.
And so now there are no more labor camps, but there are these Polanco parks. And so I went to go check one out.
Se llama Duarte Mobile Home Park. ¿Y ustedes son los Duartes?
Sí, mi esposa. Okay.
I met the Duartes, Marcela and Silvano. They own their own Polanco Park. And it was so beautiful. I mean, first off, the scenery is gorgeous. It was like these big mountains and these purple skies, purple-pink skies, and this train in the background. It looked like a postcard.
Es el tren. Ay, qué lindo, como queda el tren.
And then the actual trailers were so beautifully maintained. And they had these, like, cactus gardens. I was in love. I was like, I'm going to move in tomorrow. This is so nice.
¿Qué estudiaste en México?
Yo estudiaba contador público.
And Silvano told me that he had studied to become an accountant in Mexico.
Me dejé la escuela para venirme a trabajar.
¿En qué trabajaste acá cuando llegaste?
En la agricultura. en el campo.
He left school to come to the U.S. and started working in irrigation on the fields, and he bought the land for the park in 1988, but it became the formal park that it is today in 2000.
Los tiempos van cambiando.
He says that the situation with the water has changed a lot over time. When he first moved in, nobody from the government would come by to check in and see if the water was safe. But then when they found out about the arsenic, that's when people from the county started to come by and check in and see what was going on.
Ahora ya estás haciendo un pozo nuevo, estás cobrándote un dinero.
The only thing that he mentioned that he was frustrated with is that in order to even have the well, he has to pay a fee. And then to have the meter that measures what the arsenic levels and all the levels of all the things in the water, he has to pay another fee.
Y hay otro cobro que se van a cobrar. Le ponen un medidor para el pozo. La agua que estás usando. Entonces paga dos veces.
Despite the fees, if there are elevated amounts of arsenic in the water or the well breaks down, the cost of fixing the problem still falls on Silvano's shoulders. But despite any frustration he might have about being a property owner, Silvano is super proud of both his mobile home park and of the life he's built here. He showed me one of his son's report cards.
So all A's?
Yeah, all A's. Silvano works these long hours, but he really makes it a point to let his kids know that he's always thinking of them.
Los miro cuando están dormidos, voy a su cama, no me miran ellos a mí. Puede que yo agarre la sábana y haga un nudo en la esquina de la sábana. Entonces ellos reconocen que, ah, mi papá fue y me miró cuando él se fue.
What Silvano will do is that in the morning before his kids get up, he'll go to their room and he'll tie a knot in their sheet. And so that when the kids wake up, they know that he was there looking over them.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's adorable.
Yeah.
Y yo cuando me muera, no me lo voy a llevar conmigo, pero sí me voy a llevar una satisfacción. Haberles dado un buen ejemplo y que ellos hagan uso de este lugar y lo cuiden para sus hijos.
He says that after he dies, he'll be glad if his kids can take over the park and that they can take care of it and then one day their kids will take care of it.
You know, Antonia, it's kind of like Silvano. He kind of reminded me of Castulo's dad, Jerónimo.
Totally. I think both Silvano and Castillo's story demonstrate something important, which is that this group of people on the east side is not just a group of seasonal migrant workers anymore. They're people who have put down roots and consider Coachella, the same way Castillo does, a home.
I always felt like if I felt that I could be helpful, that it was almost like my responsibility to do it. You know, I think that's why I always wanted to come back. I thought that certain communities need folks that are willing to come back and kind of take that role. Also, you know, as I'm learning, I'm learning a lot of history, of this valley, who's done what, who's been involved, and maybe I'm just, you know, maybe the torch just got passed, and, you know, I'm still learning. I'm still trying to put things into perspective.
Before I left Coachella, Gasuda wanted to give me some perspective, so he took me to one last spot.
We're at the... I think it's called the Desert Marriott Springs or Marriott's Desert Springs. Anyway, it's the spring resort.
There's a pool inside the building that has like full-size boats that people can sit in inside the building.
That's right. The first time I came here was for a meeting. And I had a meeting here at this lounge here. I grew up in this valley, and the first time I came here was maybe about 2 years ago.
And what do you think when you came?
I thought it was beautiful. But I think in order to accomplish this, there was a lot of effort, a lot of will, a lot of minds came together and said, how can we achieve this? And it was done. Whenever I hear that certain things can't be done, it's hard for me to believe because I see what people can achieve when they try. And a lot of what you see in the West Side is the collaboration of a lot of effort, a lot of people coming together, a lot of agencies, and making the thing happen.
The thing I really took away from the reporting I did on this story is that the amount of planning that it took to make what is the West today in the United States is astounding. It's not by coincidence that we have these giant metropolises in the middle of the desert. And it was the work of engineers and politicians, people like Gastula.
So what's his role in the future?
Pastulo is in an incredibly important position because historically, the big decisions made about the control of resources in the area have not always included everyone at the table who has been affected. And there are more challenges to come. We learned about how the aquifer levels were going down. Well, there are signs that the Colorado River, which has been replenishing the aquifer for nearly a century, is dwindling. And that's why for Castulo, it is important to have agencies like the Coachella Valley Water District and why he takes his job so seriously. He is constantly thinking of solutions and ways to plan for the future.
So what do you think? Will Castulo actually stick around the Coachella Valley? I mean, is he there to stay?
I think the Coachella Valley is 100% where Castulo Estrada's heart is and where it always will be.
All right, Antonia, well, thank you so much for this great reporting.
Thank you, Maria.
We first aired this story about a year ago. And since then, in part thanks to Castulo, a new sewage system was installed at the St. Anthony Mobile Home Park, where septic tanks used to fail. And there are early plans being made to build a water line that will connect mobile home parks on the east side of the valley. Our show. Today's episode was reported and produced by Antonia Cerejido. Latino USA's production team included Marlon Bishop, Fernanda Chavarri, Chidi Montalvo, Julia Xu, Zakia Gibbons, Noam Hassenfeld, and Maggie Freeling. Our senior editor was Nadia Raymond. Our production manager was Natalia Fidelholz. Special thanks to Catherine Stifter, Michelle Levander, and everyone at the USC Annenberg Center for Health Journalism. And if you enjoyed the music that you heard on this episode and want to learn more, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. Also, my dear listener, I want to tell you about something really exciting. This year, Latino USA turns 25. And on Sunday, August 12th in New York City, we're teaming up with the City Park Summer Stage to celebrate with Grammy winner Jerry Rivera, New Yorican poet La Bruja, and percussionist Chembo Corniel. Come out and party with the Latino USA team in New York City's East River Park, and I'll see you there. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next week, and in the meantime, look for us on Facebook, on Twitter, and on Instagram. I'll see you there. Ciao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by California Endowment, building a strong state by improving the health of all Californians. The Annie E. Casey Foundation creates a brighter future for the nation's children by strengthening families, building greater economic opportunity, and transforming communities. And funding for Latino USA's coverage of a culture of health is made possible in part by a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and from the Kauffman Foundation, working together with communities in education and entrepreneurship to create uncommon solutions and empower people to shape their lives and be more successful. More online at kauffman.org. And the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide to address inequality in all its forms. Learn more at fordfoundation.org. This is NPR.